The following women's spaces show was recorded on Monday, May 13th, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my partner, my co-producer, my engineer, and all-around helper, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Wow, what a day it is here in Sonoma County. I want to welcome everybody, and I have a very, very special show this morning. Joining me on the phone is going to be Riviera Sun. Riviera Sun has written numerous books and novels, including The Dandelion Insurrection and the award-winning Ari series. She is the editor of A Nonviolence News and the program coordinator for Campaign Nonviolence. Riviera Sun is also a member of Code Pink and has written an updated version of the Mother's Day Proclamation, who was written in 1870 by Julia Ward. Since yesterday we celebrated Mother's Day, I thought this would be a great, great show to have Riviera Sun on. Well, anyway, I want to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day to all those listening. Yesterday was Mother's Day. I love being with my family and friends. A shout out to my daughter, Susan. She's a beautiful spirit, a wonderful mother, and now a grandmother. And I was so excited that I was able to see my granddaughter, Caitlin, who came in from San Diego, and my beautiful, beautiful great-grandchildren, Satori and Kara. And so happy to see, I was listening to a wonderful thing that my grandson Ryan wrote about. He has a daycare center, and how wonderful, and what they're teaching the children all about the earth. And just hello to everybody who was at the party, and congratulations to all the mothers out there. I know you celebrated a wonderful day, but you know, it's very, very interesting. You know, at one time, Mother's Day was actually set up to be an anti-war program. You know, you celebrated mothers with the idea that no mother would send her son to kill another mother's son. That was the whole idea about Julia Howe's Mother's Day proclamation. And we're going to play that proclamation by Gisele. It's a very, very, very strong program. And then we're also going to talk about the new Mother's Day proclamation and also some of the things that Riviera Sun is up to. It's just amazing. And my heart goes out to all the mothers out there I know that are suffering from wars. And I mean, it's just amazing when you start thinking about it. Here we are in 2024, and Julia Ward Howe actually wrote her Mother's Day proclamation in 1870. So it shows how long women have been struggling to try to bring in peace. And you know, it's another interesting that happened this month that I found out around Mother's Day and around all the other different things that happen around this holiday was on May 12, 1968, there was a 12-block Mother's Day march of welfare mothers that was held in Washington, D.C., and it was led by Coretta Scott King, and she was accompanied by Ethel Kennedy. Ethel Kennedy was the wife of the former Vice President Robert Kennedy, so it was really, really an interesting thing. So let me just read this. On May 12, 1968, 2 weeks after the coalition of 100 leaders met with federal agencies, the Poor People's Campaign officially launched its first public demonstration, a Mother's Day march and rally. Coretta Scott Ethel Kennedy led the event, and the National Welfare Rights Organization was the principal organization. It's called NWRA. It worked with grassroots organizations to bring hundreds and thousands of participants to Washington from across the country to demonstrate. And one of the things, I have a quote from Coretta Scott King, which I think is really very interesting, and it really goes in tune with Mother's Day. I firmly believe our last and best hope for the future of brotherhood and sisterhood and peace lies in the effective use of women's power. And that's what she said, Coretta Scott King, at the Mother's Day March on May 12, 1968. So it was really, really a very powerful event. Well, we're going to have a lot to cover today. And so we're going to play the Mother's Day Proclamation. Ken will go ahead and play that. And then we're going to go ahead and get a hold of Rivera's son, Ken. Okay.
Got it.
Okay. Let's go ahead. Let's put on the Mother's Day Proclamation. And that is recited by Gazella Rowe.
Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have questions answered by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands will not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of one country, will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the voice of a devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe our dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace. Each bearing after his own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a general congress of women without limit of nationality may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and the earliest period consistent with its objectives to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interests of peace.
Welcome back. You know, we just listened to the Mother's Day Proclamation that was recited by Gazella Rowe. And right now, I want to welcome everybody. And I want to remind folks, for you just listening, that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its members, its board of directors, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest joining me on the phone, Rivera Sun. Rivera, good morning, and welcome to Women's Spaces.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, I am just thrilled. I just can't believe that we're actually talking, particularly since I found the Mother's Day Proclamation that you rewrote and that you did it in 2020. And I just think it's just an amazing document. Before we start, is it okay if I tell my listeners a little bit about you?
Sure, I think they'd love to know.
Author, artist, Rivera Sun has written numerous books and novels, including The Dandelion Insurrection and the award-winning Ari Era series. She is editor of the Nonviolence News and the program coordinator for Campaign Nonviolence. Her articles are syndicated by Peace Voice and established in hundreds of journals nationwide. Rivera is a member of Code Pink and serves on the advisory board of World Beyond War, and she is the board backbone for the campaign. And her website is www.rivera.sun.com. And she's on the program this morning to not only talk about all the great things she's doing around nonviolence, but also about the Mother's Day Proclamation that she's been involved with. Do you like to, anything else that you would like to add, Rivera?
I think that was a great summary of the many ways that I show up for peace and justice in our world, particularly with an emphasis on kind of cultural and artistic and creative angles. because I think they're very powerful in our society.
Well, it's just such an honor to interview you. You know, and you know, this is Women's Spaces, and the whole idea, it's dedicated to ordinary women doing extraordinary thing, and also to give confidence to women to stand up and speak out for peace. So begin with, tell us a little bit about your motivation for becoming an activist. What sparked you, and were there any particular women that influenced you?
Wonderful. So I grew up on a organic farm in northern Maine, and I like to tell people that my first nonviolent action, my first action as an activist, was actually picking potatoes on this farm, or pulling weeds, or any of the chores that go into growing local food and getting taking care of the land at the same time. Now, it took me a decade or more of growing up and learning to recognize that the things I was doing at 13, 14 years old were what Gandhi would call constructive program, where we build the new world, build the alternative, build the things we want to see as a way of resisting the structures and the systems that we oppose. So I feel like I got my start, like many of us, as a young person, but I didn't recognize it at the time. And it wasn't until I was much older, had gone through college and graduated, started writing novels, actually, that really got me thinking about what is resistance and how do we make change in our society, that I recognized what I was doing as a young person.
That's amazing when you start thinking about it. You know, I was thinking of my own self when I was about 14 or 15. None of this was even in the air. You know, I mean, I'm quite a bit older than you, but none of this was in the air. And it's so inspiring to hear how different ways that young people get the idea and do. And it's just amazing to me. You know, at that time, you know, it sounds like you were a little bit on the edge of many different things. What were some of the challenges, or what were some of the things that people start telling you? Were they for it, or were they against it, or were they supporting you?
Well, that really depends kind of at different chapters of my life. As a young person on an organic farm, of course, we had some challenges in terms of just getting our produce into your standard grocery store. Most people don't know this, but it's a very complicated system, and your local growers are up against it to try to get you produce from their farms. So we formed a cooperative of small farms to achieve that goal, which, again, is part of this work of making change, that as individuals, we often don't have quite enough clout, enough power, which is why we come together and we form social movements and we work together to leverage my piece of power and your piece of power so that we have people power together.
Well,
I would just add that when I was about a very young child, there was a little girl named Samantha Smith that some of you may remember. And she wrote a letter to the president of the Soviet Union saying, "Why do you want to go to war with us?" This was like in the 80s and the tail end of the Cold War. And it was just sort of dragging on. And young Samantha Smith wrote this letter. She was just a child. And to her surprise, the president wrote back and said, "Dear Samantha, we don't want to go to war. We're just people like you. We want to grow our grain and we want to raise our children." And this exchange between them actually got national and international attention. It rehumanized the Russians in the eyes of the general public, and it helped to bring the Cold War to an end. So when you ask me about who are some peace activists, particularly female peace activists, who inspire you, I have to say that Samantha Smith was a very early impression upon me about the power that we have when we stand up to do something for peace.
Well, it is. It's exciting to hear this, you know, and I realize how important our history is, because you mentioned this woman, and I don't even recall it, and I'm definitely going to do some research and find that letter and be able to read it on Women's Spaces, which lead us to the next issue here. You know, you were very involved. You're involved with Code Pink. You're on their advisories committee, but you also decided, or the group decided, that they were going to rewrite the Mother's Day Proclamation, which was the first one, which we played at the beginning of the show, was by Julia Howe, which was after she visited the fields when after the Civil War and found in baskets these arms and legs and feet of soldiers that they wrote. She wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation, which was quite something very diverse, because she also wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic, which was a very, you know, very kind of, I would say, religious program. So talk about what inspired you all of a sudden, or what inspired Code Pink to suddenly write this proclamation, this new proclamation, and why do you think that's important in today's world?
Well, I think at the time, I had known about Code Pink since their formation in the lead up to the invasion of Iraq back in 2001. I was a young college student at the time, and honestly, I was a bit tuned out and apolitical, and didn't have a lot of faith in social movements. But what I saw was that people like Code Pink were getting in the way. They were standing up and disrupting, war as usual. And they were making sure that our voices as people who opposed war were taken right to the power holders who were making that decision. So over the years, I followed them and stayed involved, and slowly came to see how change is made, particularly around peace, which is a very challenging issue to campaign on. And I had read about Julia Ward Howe's peace proclamation and was very moved by it. So one Mother's, as we approached another Mother's Day, and people started putting out the post to buy your flowers and buy your brunch, you know, there's always a war happening. We haven't not had war for quite a while. So I thought, let's brush it off. Let's dust it off and rephrase it a little bit for these times, to make just enough of a change that we feel that sense of urgency and relevancy, stay true to the core of what Howe was saying, while also relating it to some of the things that we feel and experience.
Well, you know, it's an amazing piece. At first, I just got the small piece that seemed to go around through Facebook and around the internet, and then I read the whole thing. And one of the things that I'm thinking is that if you've moved away from the kind of the religious content to open it up to a more worldly content, would you agree with that?
Yes, that's one of the big shifts that I made. Howe's is written very much in a time when Christianity was the central religion of the United States, and the division of church and state, or society and church, was not as strong and maybe not felt to be quite as important as we feel now, as our society is becoming more multicultural, more multi-faith, and as people are expressing their spirituality in different ways. So I did shift the language to be more welcoming and inclusive of people of many different views, and even those who are uncommitted or unsure or uninterested in a spiritual perspective. At the same time, I think the piece itself taps into humanitarian values, our common humanity. So it says things, that we see the cruelties of war. We see how it demands the blood sacrifices of mothers, of children, of young and old, civilian and soldier, foreign and domestic. And it's time to say no more. See, these are things that we all relate to. We recognize the pain and the horror that is in war.
Well, you know, we're going to take a musical break in a few minutes, if that's okay with you, and then we'll continue, because I want to go over some of the amazing things you were doing, especially some of the books you have written and some of the ideas that you have around working towards peace and training for peace. And I'm going to play the song I'm going to play is Where Have All the Flowers Gone? And what's very interesting, I was listening to a Peter, Paul, and Mary conversation, and they pointed out that in that song there are 10 questions. The song is really asking 10 questions that will help us towards peace.
It's blowing in the wind.
Blowing in the Wind. I called it Where Have All the Flowers Gone? It's Blowing in the Wind. And it's really a great, great song to represent what we're talking about. So if you don't mind, I just want to read the beginning of the Mother's Day proclamation that you wrote in 2019. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Here we go, folks. This is kind of a more modern version. I mean, we just listened to the first version with Julia Weil by Gazelle Howe when she read that. Now we're going to see, let's listen to what Rivera-san wrote, and this was the beginning of it. Instead of flowers, give us peace. Instead of brunch and the wars, let no mother raise their children to kill another mother's children. Give us instead the abolition of war, the promotion of peace, and the care of people and planet. To commemorate Mother's Day without demanding these changes rings that to every mother appreciating the beauty of the spring, other mothers in another screaming under the horror of bombs and bullets. For every mother savoring breakfast in bed, there is another mother hungry and unnourished, stateless and fleeing from war. We, the mothers and the children of mothers, stand united against war and united for the well-being of people and planet. That just gives me chills, Rivera. It is beautiful. So thank you for writing that. What is your thought when you hear it just recited on the air like this?
Oh, it's beautiful to hear people put it in their own voice and to hear you speak these words and to hear them kind of resonating in you. You know, I think that is the point of these beautiful statements that people over time have written, is that we take them into our hearts, we take them into our lives, and we keep them new and fresh. We make the sound into the space to reaffirm our commitment and our intention.
Well, thank you for that. And now we're going to take a musical break, and we're going to play Blowing in the Wind, sung by the Minstrel Seekers. And the song expresses what I believe is appropriate today's show. Pay close attention, because they are asking 10 important questions that need to be solved to have peace. When we return, I will continue my conversation with Rivera-san, accomplished author and creator of the updated Mother's Day Proclamation written for Code Pink, Women for Peace. Go ahead, Ken.
How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. How many years before it's washed in the sea? How many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
How many times can a man look up before he can see the sky?
How many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? How many deaths will it
Wow, I'll tell you something. I cannot believe I can see myself protesting in the late 60s and listening to that song. And here we are in 2024, and it's just as relevant today as it was then. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm Elaine B. Holtz. And with it, me on the phone, and I'm continuing my conversation with Riviera Sun. Welcome back, Riviera.
Thank you.
I'm just so thrilled to have you and so proud. I mean, it's just reading about all the different things you have been involved in and all these wonderful, wonderful series. So, you know, it's so important right now, particularly that women speak out and stand up for peace. You know, I am a person, and I believe in the universal concept that if there's such a thing as a creator, we as women, whether we have children or not, we were endowed with the power to bring forward life. And I really believe that each and every one of us has to take a stand for peace. And I found that you've written a series of books. You know, one of them you wrote was called the Ari Era series. Talk a little bit about that and why you believe that series is very important and you feel that it's a way for peace, for people to understand how they can move towards peace.
Yeah, thank you. So I don't have children myself, but my twin sister has two sons and a daughter. And one day I looked at them and I thought, what are they going to think when they get old enough to start reading things like The Hunger Games or any of the number of young adult assassin, war, violence, military school spinoff fantasy novels? Young people love fantasy. I grew up loving fantasy. But if we look at that genre, it is really just completely chock full with grotesque amounts of violence. It has been escalating over the past decade or two. So I gave myself a question. Can you tell a compelling, inspiring, gripping story in the fantasy genre that does not advocate war and violence, but instead gives the tools of active nonviolence, things like boycotts, strikes, sit-ins, blockades, walkouts, the things that young people today are actually using to shape and change our world, and to have them not fight the wars, but stop the wars? Could that be a worthy goal? And so the Ari Era series has all the things we love about fantasy and stories: great characters, compelling plot lines, exciting plot twists. But the purposes of it are very different than what we classically see. And what I've found over the 10 years of writing this series and getting thousands of copies into the hands of young people and older people is that particularly the young people absolutely love it. I do classroom visits virtually, and the kids line up to ask questions. They are obsessed with this series. They play in the world of Ari Era. She learns a non-martial art, kind of like Aikido, called The Way Between, which is defensive and is about stopping violence. And they play this in the backyard. They're inventing it in their heads because we're not delivering it in reality. And so to me, that's an incredibly beautiful thing and speaks to the power of story, that we can enliven our minds to see and understand how we can work to stop violence, to stop wars, and to advance peace and justice.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you bring that up about young people, because I have to go back to the proclamation, because I'm thinking about what's happening right here in our own country when you have students going out now and trying to get different universities to diverge from investing in any kind of war or any kind of war profiting that their colleges and campuses might have. And, you know, one of the targets right now, I believe, is Israel because of what's going on in the Middle East. And when you go back to the proclamation, and then you listen to your, you know, talking about the narrative about having a new story. At the same time, you see the police out there really harassing some of the students, you know, I mean, breaking up these encampments and really some, you know, pretty violent acts that are going on across. And then when I look to the proclamation and I look to mothers standing up, how do you see that proclamation coming alive, or that attitude coming alive with the whole idea, I will not send another son to kill another mother's son? How do you see that coming alive today in this particular event for parents or for adults?
Well, I think it's so powerful to remember that, you know, underneath all the excuses we have for war, at the end of the day, we are making a choice as human beings to either fight directly or to send someone else to fight in our stead, a war in which we're going to kill someone else's child and put them in a situation of conflict in which that seems like their only option. And at the end of the day, that is a great travesty. It is a complete tragedy, and it is a failure upon every single adult in the room being the world. We have so many opportunities to solve our conflicts as humans in other ways, to intentionally allow our societies to become so invested in, both financially, socially, culturally, politically, in war and the war machine, is a moral shame on us. That's why in the new proclamation, I call for the abolition of war, this crazy idea that we don't just need to end this war or that war. We as human beings can end all war and the very institution of war. People think we've had this forever, but actually the earliest known archaeological evidence of war is only from 10,000 BC. That sounds like a long time, but the thing is, humans have had things like dogs for twice as long. We've had jewelry and statue and religions and boats and weaving and fishing and fire and stories and art for 100,000 years, some of these things, 200,000 in some of those examples. So, you know, it's a relatively new and recent thing for humanity, and we could make it a blip on our timeline, that little era, that 10,000, 12,000 year piece of human history where we decided war was a good way to solve our problems. And I think if we're ever going to get to that vantage point where we have ended this absolutely horrific behavior of ours, it's going to take everyone standing up. Traditionally, we've had most of the recent wars in human history being fought and waged and decided upon by men. It's one of the outgrowths of patriarchy. We do know from peace studies and peace research that when women are involved in peace negotiations, the outcome is not just that it is more likely to get a peace deal, but that the peace deal itself is more likely to be lasting in the societies that are in conflict. So we know that women are incredibly important for achieving peace in our world.
Well, you know, it brings two things to memory. When Abigail Adams told her husband, when they went to do the Continental Congress for our country, you know, to start writing the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all those wonderful things, she said, don't forget the women. And then, you know, don't forget to include the women. And then when you look at the Iroquois who really influenced Benjamin Franklin, when they came to that same meeting, the first question they asked was, where are the women? You know, because the women were the peacemakers, because we bring the children in. You know, we're looking at that aspect of it. So when you're talking about, the series that you wrote, and I know there was another series or another application you did was called the Dandelion series. Can, you know, how is that telling another story? I mean, what is the story that you're telling and you're trying to bring alive to people? What are you trying to get them to think about? Because for myself, I'm always asking, what is it in each of us, each and every human being, that we can build airplanes? You know, we can replace teeth now, and we can't find a way to peace.
Well, I think in the United States, we have a couple of problems that we're up against. One is that we have become a very militarized society, but we often don't recognize that in ourselves. We do know from media studies that particularly from 2000 to 2010, the fastest growing value in American society was acceptance of violence. So we're seeing more of it on our screens. We're becoming inured to it. At the same time, every time that we spend an hour, a minute, a second with a violent narrative, you know, the guy grabs a gun and gets the girl and rides off into the sunset, that is a missed opportunity for showing a nonviolent conflict skill. So in my work, in the novels, what I try to do is draw from the best practices that are being used all over the world and to show how viable, practical peace and nonviolent skills are useful when we confront conflicts of both the real sort and the fictional sort. Stories are always how we as human beings train our societies. And if we don't want all this war and violence, we need to stop telling war and violence stories. And we need to start telling stories that do credit and justice to the fact that nonviolent action has shown itself to be twice as effective as violence for things like overthrowing dictators, expelling foreign invasions, ending foreign occupations, the things that we think we should be using war for. In fact, the best tools that work the fastest and have a fraction of the casualties by the empirical studies are the tools of nonviolent action. So if we don't hurry up and put those into our stories, our myths, our legends, our Hollywood movies, then we are behind the times in terms of having our culture reflect what our societies are actually doing. Our stories are getting outdated, and we don't quite recognize that yet.
Do you think right now that there's more of an awareness around women? Because oftentimes, you know, first, particularly when this whole abortion bill, you know, this whole thing around losing our ability to choose or to put it, you know, to put it in another area. You know, oftentimes women, you find there are women surrounding who's ever the president is or whoever is signing that document. How do you think that women are more aware? Do you think there is a movement? I mean, I know Code Pink, for example. I mean, I admire so much what they're doing when you talked about, you know, how they stood up. I mean, I remember them, how many congressional meetings they were thrown out of or standing, you know, holding up a sign against war. How do you think women are responding today? Do you think it's a little more powerful or a little more awareness?
It's hard to tell, you know, compare, because we've lost so many of the stories. I think women have always objected and resisted the injustices that we see and perceive. I think what we're seeing right now is slowly more women being included in the power structures. And the question really is, are those power structures reflective of feminist values? And what are the hurdles that have to be overcome to get those power structures to respond adequately to the need for feminist values like peace, like women's bodily autonomy, like economic justice for all people, like racial justice? So I think what we do see, particularly in nonviolent struggles and the studies on that, is women are very active participants in those, and occupying more and more leadership roles. So I do think that we are seeing women being able to express tangible, real power, but it's not always through the traditional halls of power.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I do a segment. I don't know if you were listening to the beginning of the program, but I do a segment called Our History is Our Strength. And one of the things I found out that in May 12th, 1968, there was a 12-block women's march on welfare mothers that was held in Washington, D.C., led by Coretta Scott and accompanied by Ethel Kennedy. And one of the quotes that Coretta Scott became famous for is when she says, "I firmly believe our last and best hope for the future of brotherhood and peace lies in the effective use of women power." So I think in light of what she is saying, and in light of what you're writing about, especially this whole new proclamation, which just is amazing, which, by the way, folks, that proclamation will be, I'm going to post it on Women's Spaces, www.women.spaces.com. And I really encourage folks to go on the website and read it because it's got a whole new twist on it. How do you see ordinary women, for example, what are some of the things that they can do to stand up for peace, you know, and start helping to write the new story? story that you're talking about, or even, and how to support the work of your work and the work of Code Pink. I mean, many, many women, believe it or not, there's two things they don't know about. One, they don't know about Code Pink, and oftentimes they don't know that right here in Sonoma County was the birth of the Women's History Project, which gave us 1 month for Women's History Month. So how do you feel that women should, how they can stand up, and what are some of the things they can do, and how do they raise their consciousness to get to that point to where they're not listening to the old narrative and they're really marching into the new narrative?
Well, I do think that people should look up Code Pink and get on their mailing list. I also like the work of World Beyond War for war abolition. I think that, you know, it's important to stay connected to movements. So when we see a fresh assault happening, like what's going on in Gaza, or even the war that's going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the war in Yemen, there are many examples. We are already connected people who are informed, mobilized, and have a clear sense of strategy for how we can respond. So that's the first step, is to stay connected. The second step is to familiarize yourself with nonviolent resistance and all the 300-plus tools that are in that toolbox. You know, we need to know these tools. I often tell people they're as important as knowing how to drive in this time of great change that we live in. So making sure we're continuously educating ourselves and learning and studying so we can be the most skillful social change activists that we can be.
Well, you know, I just want to interrupt you. So you're the editor of the Nonviolence News and the program coordinator for Campaign Nonviolence. So how do folks go, where do they find these tools, this list of tools, and how can they participate after that?
Nonviolence International has a tactical toolbox on their website. They're at nonviolenceinternational.net, I think. And you can look them up there. You can also Google the 198 methods of nonviolent action put together by the researcher Jean Sharp. And then another important resource, particularly for women, that I'd like to mention is the book by Pam McAllister, You Can't Kill the Spirit, Stories of Women and Nonviolent Action. And then also This River of Courage, Generations of Women's Resistance in Action. Pam put together some of the most incredible stories, and it is really worth getting this book out and reading it.
Well, it's amazing, you know, all these things that oftentimes are not known. And one of the things that I like about this conversation is rather than complaining or railing against what's going on, to look at the tools of how we can prevent it, how we can join together, how we can come together in peace as women. Because I think women can have a powerful voice, particularly around the idea, like you said at the beginning, you may not be a mother, but you have here your nieces and nephews that you are very, very concerned about. You know, it's the same thing myself. I'm a great grandmother and I think, oh my goodness, another generation coming in. What is the future going to be like for them? So I really, really appreciate, all this information. And we're coming to the end of the segment, but I still have two very important questions to ask you. Well, as a coordinator for the Nonviolence News, you know, what have you learned? You know, you say there are many, many women in different things, but what is the one core that you've really learned about all this movement that keeps going on? It does not, I mean, the powers that be have to face it. It's not going away. We want peace.
Yes, so through collecting those 30 to 50 stories of nonviolence in action every single week from around the world, what I have seen is that people of all ages, genders, races, sexual orientation, political persuasion, economic class are highly active with nonviolent struggle, that generally we don't see how often it's being used and how powerful it is. We are succeeding far more often than the headlines of the regular news is telling us. We are seeing people rack up incredible victories around labor, around women's reproductive health, around ending dictatorships around the world. And it is inspiring, which really helps me be prepared as a human being in these times to do things like support a strike or a boycott, to know when it's time to go stand out on the street corner with my sign, or when it's time to stay home from work because I'm joining a general strike for peace, or to know that I can support the encampments by sending food to the students, or I can call my senators or call the administrators of the university or check in with where you went to school as an alumni and call that school and ask them to uphold the students' right to free speech and assembly. So there are just so many things that we can do, and I think when that's one thing in Nonviolence News that I remember all the time is not just that what we can do, and not just that we can do it, but that I need to keep up with my fellow human beings and get out there and get active.
Well, that is a lot, and there's one wonderful line that you have in your new Mother's Day proclamation, and I just want you to respond on this. We, the mothers and children of mothers, demand respect for our common mother, the Earth, and for the end of the military violations of her being.
This is the biggest shift from the original, is to include the remembrance that our Mother Earth is imperiled, and thus our entire species is imperiled. This is through the fossil fuels that we have waged so many wars to extract. But the Pentagon is the single largest institutional producer of carbon emissions on the planet. And we really won't solve the climate crisis without really tackling war as well. Also, there are numerous other ways in which the military is just completely destructive, and sometimes in very long-lasting ways, of the Earth, but ways that would keep you up at night if we had time to talk about all the ins and outs of them. So, you know, peace and planet go hand in hand, and we need to remember that, and we need to stand up for that without being shy, without being intimidated, to find our courage that is anchored in our deep love, and to remember our solidarity with women around the planet, the mothers of all shapes and sizes, and the children of mothers, which is indeed all of us.
You know, it's interesting. My great-granddaughter, she's 6 years old, and she asked me, why do they call it Mother Earth, Grandma? They call me Gima. And I really was taken aback by that question, and I thought, of course they call it Mother Earth. Everything we need comes from her, our food, our water, our air, everything, even the breeze, I mean, the trees. I mean, it's just amazing. So I really thank you for commenting on that. It's really very, very important that we recognize that we are children of the Earth. And what we do to her, we are actually doing to ourselves. Well, we've come to the end of our segment, Rivera Sun. I really appreciate it. I want to give you the last words. Anything more that you'd like to share beyond all the wonderful things you shared with our listening audience? And give us how they can get in touch with you, how they can get a hold of your books, anything that you feel is important that you would like them to know and how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, people can find out about my work and writings at riverasun.com. That's S-U-N, like the sun overhead. And I would just like to remind people that we have more power than we think, and that movements win or lose because of our participation in them. And at this critical time in human history, we can feel overwhelmed, we can feel afraid, we can feel daunted. But the other way to look at these times is that this is the very best time to show up in the story of human history. This is the climax, the crisis point, the make or break moment. And if you've ever fallen in love with a big epic story, you have to remember that we are living in one right now where the stakes are existential, where everything might fail, but everything might succeed. And all of that comes down to what we do with these wild and precious lives, to quote Mary Oliver. So keep showing up. Keep finding what brings your love to the surface to make it stronger than our fear. And keep learning our stories and sharing them with one another.
Well, Rivera-san, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. It's been an absolute delight, and not only a delight, but so informative and so inspiring. So thank you so much, and I want to wish you much, much success in all that you do, and to remind our listeners that all the information, all the websites, and all whatever we've talked about will be on www.womenspaces.com. And, of course, we can always get a hold of Rivera-san by going on www.riverasun.com. Thank you so much, Rivera, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. And keep up the great, great, great work.
Thank you, Elaine, and thanks for opening this really beautiful space week after week.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, I'll tell you, folks, nothing inspires me more than some of these fabulous women that I have the privilege of interviewing. It's just amazing. And, you know, I thought right now, you know, we talked a lot about mothers and their children and wars. And I think that we should send out just a message of compassion, a message of love. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play one of my favorite songs that I love to play every year around this song. It's called For the Mothers. And it's sang by Betsy. What's Betsy's last name? Can I always? Pardon?
Rose.
Betsy Rose and the Women's Chorus. Thank you so much, my love. And I want to thank Ken, you know, I mean, for really joining me on these shows. And I got my fingers crossed. We're going to now make an announcement maybe in a few weeks. We might be adding another segment to our show, and it's going to be a really, really interesting. But we have to wait a little bit a while for that. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play We For the Mothers. And listen to this. We're sending out of compassion. We're sending out love and understanding, and also sending out to the hope that one day, all of a sudden, we will hear an announcement that peace across the globe has come. Go ahead, Ken.
I sing for the mothers all over the earth, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers all over the earth, for their sorrow, for their love. May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth.
I sing for the mothers of soldiers at war, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers of soldiers at war, for their sorrow, for their love.
May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing.
Countries at war, for mothers who cannot feed their children.
We, the mothers and children of mothers, stand united against war and the well-being of people and planet. What a beautiful thought. Well, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for listening. And I look forward to being with you the next time. And like I say at the end of every show, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. Thank you so much for listening, and I wish you a blessed day. Enjoy the beauty of the earth, the beauty of the sky, the beauty and the hope of the future, and also be grateful that you have another day to live, to laugh, to smile, and to be on earth and to work for peace. Thank you once again. And in the words of a friend of mine's child for Max, children just want to play with one another, and that's it.
She's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, May 13th, 2024.